Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave Kruger. It's great to have you, and I'm really looking forward to our series. I see a number of familiar names in the registration list, and a few new people. I'm really excited to do this. Let me tell you a little bit of background, and I want you to be thinking about adding to the responses I've already received from the email I sent asking two questions. If we were to sit down right now, face-to-face, at least 6 feet apart in mask, of course, and you were to say, what's the one thing you most have a question about this entire subject area, what would it be? And if you walk away 4 weeks from now saying this is one of the best series, most useful seminar series you've attended, what would you walk away with? Now, I appreciate the responses I've gotten from those of you who have responded. It helps me very much know what kinds of questions you have, and specifically to make it very timely and appropriate for each of you. What I did in putting together this material, I began to hear the same basic challenges of the coaches I trained in a number of settings and the coaches who I did individual mentor coaching with, of looking at their practices and wanting to expand that, feeling that they were well-trained, had great skills, but needed to develop their own practices. And that's exactly what I've done, is to put together in my own way and valuing the how the mind and brain sciences can tremendously add value when applied to strategic coaching. I did that with this whole area of influence psychology, of persuasion neuroscience, of marketing, to look at what can we do in a much more informed way to generate the kind of practices that can most benefit everyone concerned. So that's my background. One thing that I'll tell you in terms of the basic, remember your microphone is picking up even a cough. So if you can mute *6, we have a large number of people. Somebody's bound to cough. Somebody's bound to spill coffee and appeal to one of their own deities about that. So if you would mute *6, and then when you're ready to talk, *6 again. And in a few minutes when we go to the lecture mode, you won't have to worry about that. But what I usually do before converting this into any kind of fixed product is what's most enjoyable for me, to do a few of these presentations, to have interaction, to hear the concerns, to hear the questions of people. So I offered two or three of these teleseminar series when I spent my couple of years in putting this material together. And then I realized I was not applying what I was training, teaching, and sharing with people. So I revised my offering done under MentorPath, now under CTA, to incorporate what I learned about applying the mind and brain sciences to this subject. The first seminar series I did, 8 times as many people as the previous largest amount. So I'm here to tell you this stuff works, and I'm very interested in collaborating with you to apply it to things that would be useful for you. So anyone want to answer either or both of these questions? If you didn't get the email in time, or if you have an idea now that you just want to add to the hopper about what's your most pressing question and what you'd like to walk away with, anyone? Doesn't have to be profound.
Hi, Dave. This is Carlene
from
Edmonton. Hi.
Great.
Well, I guess my most pressing question is how to find marketing techniques, I guess, that feel authentic. Because often I know things will work. I know the stats on them, and I know that people have tried them, but it absolutely doesn't resonate with me, and so
yeah.
I don't do it.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
I totally understand that, and that was one of my motivations in looking at getting a much more informed approach, a much more engaged approach that would really be focused on potential clients and not on some marketing or some other kinds of things. So I really appreciate that question, and I think it's so fundamental. So, yes, Carlene, thanks.
Thank you.
I plan to get there for each of you, and it may be a bit different because this is something that whatever you say in whatever medium, whether it's on a website, a blog, whether you talk to somebody, it has to sound like you talking instead of you reading something that you've written, and it has to be in your voice. It has to sound like the authentic you, and the best way to do that is to feel authentic as you're saying it, as you're engaging it, and with the mindset of confidence. And remember, the most powerful and the fastest and most contagious thing in the world, faster than the fastest virus, is a state of mind, and confidence is a state of mind. So that's part of the backdrop. If you have time, look at my blog called Confidence is a State of Mind. It's one of the archived blogs. So that, I think, is such an essential aspect of what we do, and I promise I won't elaborate as much on each question, but just sort of log them in because I value your input, and it helps me shape the material and the discussion, especially about what's prepared. You see the outline. There's some of it I put in the outline because we're not going to cover. I'm not going to go over some of the lists and that sort of thing, but I want to bring it alive and make it applicable And that's a perfect question for other questions or other responses to those two questions that that I sent around. I appreciate what you have responded already by email. I welcome you doing that as you think about it, and you can send those to me at any time. Okay, final call. Anything else anybody wants to add or ask at this point? Well, I'm going to put us on lecture mode then, and I want to reserve some time at the end, so jot down any questions or clarifications that you have then. Okay, here's the premise and the overview to what we're going to do these 4 weeks. Practicing professionals in healthcare, law, finance, accounting, business, coaching are well-educated and trained, but we may reluctantly acknowledge that we're also in business. We're able to help others achieve their goals, but we may still be learning how to translate that into doing the same for our own practices and businesses. In coaching, we're a profession, but we're also a business. So here's what we're going to do together during these four seminars. Innovative work in the mind and brain sciences help us understand more about the topics of these seminars, the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, mindset mastery, and neuromarketing, to apply each to add immensely to your business success. This is not education about these different disciplines. This is all bringing it together to apply for your bottom line, specifically how these brain-based strategies of the persuasion sciences can generate measurable improvement of engagement and sales for your professional services and products. This is a system of creating rather than a method of hoping. And many of you have heard me say repeatedly, if you want to change something or create something new, focus on the system, not just the goal. So that's what we're about to do. So our first seminar is about the psychology of influence. So here's a quiz. You see this in your outline. I know the outline was a little bit long, but I wanted to include everything in a fairly annotated outline so you wouldn't have to take a bunch of notes. But here's the quiz I'd like you to think about. The American Sociological Review studied the hiring practices of three elite industries: law, investment banking, management consulting firms, to determine the primary criteria for those qualified to make the final round of interviews to be added to the firm. So what do you think the primary quality was that people who made the final round shared? Intellectual prestige, like where they obtained their degree, grade point average, sharing similar experiences as the interviewer, expertise in the area of the specific position sought, or recommendations to get to that position. Jot down your answer, if you would. I'll tell you later, and I'll even tell you why I didn't tell you until later. So, influence simply means to enhance the likelihood of a choice, to heighten the probability of agreement and predictability. Influence moves people to a desired outcome while helping them to feel genuinely good about themselves and you. Authentic, in other words. Let's talk for a minute about the brain science of story. You know you guys were going to hear this from me. Four questions. Jot down your answers, and I'll tell you this time sooner, because the reason I'm holding off on the answers is on the other one is a neuroscience principle in action. So, four questions, and you see this in your outline. Just jot down your answer. What draws you into a story? Either one word or a very short phrase. What sustains your engagement as a listener or reader? What are you responding to when a story engages you? What determines bestsellers from non-sellers? Now, think about these first three questions are things that you're doing in engaging the marketing of your coaching practice, the services, or the products. Now, the hint here, all four have the same answer. The answer to all four questions, we must want to know what happens next. A story is hardwired in our brain. It shows how we strategically make sense of an overwhelming world and how we remember. For a story to capture and sustain interest, from the first sentence, the reader or the listener must want to know what happens next. When a story meets these neural requirements of novelty and anticipation, it engages and remains successful. Neuroscience reveals that what draws us into a story and keeps us there is the firing of the dopamine system, the pleasure chemical, signaling that intriguing information is unfolding. This is what keeps us paying attention. So, what do you want the reader or listener to walk away thinking about? What point does your story make? How do you want to change the way your listener or reader sees the world? If the recipient doesn't want to know what happens next, no matter how well crafted, it won't engage. In fact, Stephen King said this in a very simple way. You know, all the author ever has to do in any book is just keep the reader asking one question. What happens next? Cisco CEO John Chambers didn't communicate to employees, clients, or colleagues about selling switches and routers. He sold a story, a vision of an internet that changes the way we live, work, play, and learn. Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't sell coffee and lattes, but the concept of community, a third place between home and work. And listen to how, at the time, Steve Jobs convinced former Pepsi president John Sculley to become CEO at Apple. They were on a balcony overlooking Central Park in New York City, and Jobs simply asked Sculley, well, do you want to keep selling sugared water all your life, or do you want to change the world? The essence of influence is based on the brain's need for a story. We have a biology for reciprocation, an innate desire to bond, to connect. Story is an essential element of explanation to bring together and balance the emotional and the rational. If your business is not based on a story, you won't have a business. All good stories give a promise in the beginning, a promise that it will be worth your time. You invite the listener to join to the campfire of the story. Once upon a time. Storytelling, like life, has guidelines, not rules. In order to engage a listener or a reader, write or tell a vivid story about your service or product or brand, ideally all together. Include aspects that would activate different parts of their brains, action, dialogue, sensory experiences. Nancy Duarte has studied the craft of storytelling and dramatic plot structure by analyzing hundreds of the most famous speeches of all time and testing different story structures. She discovered a story pattern at the foundation of the most influential speeches of all time, and it's based on the brain's being a pattern recognition organ. Here's what she found. It's a combination of what is followed by what could be for several sequences. She superimposed the sequence of the patterns of the talks of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, Stephen Jobs' well-known graduation speech, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, to name a few of the hundreds she studied. each fit the same configuration pattern, a series of what is followed by what can be. Here's a way to create that influential story pattern. The context, the preface, is that your story has to be in your own voice. To create a clear and compelling story about your body of work, find a thread of connection with your audience as you craft specific messages. It has to sound like you talking, not reading a script again, and to be genuine, authentic, as if the person sitting across from you is actually sitting across from you. So there are three story components of every successful story, from novel to blog to a good story tale. Three components: challenge, development, resolution. And I'm going to infer or suggest how to incorporate these even as you recommend your professional services to a client at the end of a discussion or a sample session. These building blocks, challenge, development, resolution, are common to all successful stories, from effective marketing to best-selling novels and films. So, as I describe these three story components, think about how you can apply them in two ways. Having a brief discussion with a potential client about your services, and then recommending your professional services after a discussion. All three components for both of those parts. So let's develop these three story building blocks. And I'm going to give you an example from something you already read and didn't have this pattern recognition to recognize it at the time. One, the challenge. Find the client's challenge, the problem or pain. Find the deep want or interest that's not filled. What the client wants and needs but are not getting. What they're not able to do or be themselves, because that defines what they'll pay you for, by the way. This is the only thing they'll pay you for. The foundation of effective influence is to first highlight the challenge or the unmet need. So, know the audience and three things about them: their deepest needs, their deepest desires, their deepest concerns. This is why you may want to go first with your lowest hanging fruit, because these are the people you know, people you have a relationship with already, and you can probably already begin to answer this question about them. From this knowledge, describe a situation as the audience knows it. What is? Remember those two Nancy Duarte components. You're articulating what they already know and experience. This creates a bond of understanding, a common ground between you and the audience, and readies them to hear your ideas for change. Second story component, the development. The development of a story is to move from the challenge to the resolution, their desired goal. Remember, this is not about you. It's about the client. That is, it's helpful to know a client's external goal and what achieving that goal means, their motivation, their internal goal. The internal goal involves what achieving the external goal really means for them. So to further the story development, consider, again, from the client's point of view, these questions. Will it give the client what the client wants and needs? Will it be worth it? Will the client be able to justify it? Do they need it now? The third component, the story resolution, show them how to resolve their challenge, how to solve it, how to address their issue by using your service or your product. Remember, both mind and brain seek closure. You can help your client clearly and accurately associate a desired feeling or state with your product or service. The resolution is the powerful ending of the story of this discussion. Make it compelling and real and authentic. They will then authentically associate buying with pleasure and not buying with pain. More on this in next seminar. Now remember, we want emotionally but justify logically. So we make emotional decisions first and before finding logical reasons. So find the emotional reason, their reason to buy now. Now, I want to apply this to what you've already read and to think about it. The what is and the what can be. In the marketing email for this series, there were six bullets when I said, consider these questions. The first was, do you have significant expertise and credentials, but not enough clients? Then below that, skip past the next five bullets, below that was, in this series, you will learn, and there were also six bullets. Now, these happen to correspond, bullet one equals bullet one. The answer, the resolution of that question was in the second set of bullets about what you'll learn. So the answer to that, how to systematically shape the primary reason people buy professional services and products. Then each question has a corresponding answer or a way of addressing it throughout that initial series. That's what I changed to when I had the big increase, because I really realized that I needed to resonate with the questions the coaches were having when they felt that they were terrifically trained, had all kinds of skills, but they weren't having the clients that they really wanted. So here's a specific application. When you come to the end of your discussion with a potential client or a sample session, to recommend your professional services clearly and succinctly in three sentences. This is the challenge, the development, and the resolution of the recommendation. The challenge is summarize the client's challenge. Clear, brief, and simple. One sentence. How you can help in offering professional coaching services. The development. One sentence. Your mentor coaching recommendation, the framework, how someone will, what they need to do before the first session to fill out the client information packet, what it entails, 50-minute sessions on a standing time, and then your fee. Again, one sentence each, clear, brief, and succinct. We're going to return to that. So in any business context, if you fail to transport your listener emotionally, you'll lose them or simply get no response. Emotional transportation is the complex system of action and reaction that operates within stories to move listeners. And the reason, the fuel that propels these three building blocks of all compelling stories, challenge, development, and resolution, is emotion. The best stories lead with the heart, and that's why we begin often with an empathic resonance with someone. We're going to return to that, and I have a little exercise about how to do that in a much clearer way. So let's look first at the four primary tools of influence. These are in your outline. I just want to talk about them a little bit. One is the influential story pattern. Think about it. Why is Apple so innovative? Year after year, they're more innovative than their competition, and yet they're just a computer and tech products company. They have the same access to the same talent, the same agencies, consultants, and media. So what is it that accounts for their phenomenal success? Think about that for a minute. Why is it that Martin Luther King led the civil rights movement? He wasn't the only guy in town who suffered a pre-civil rights problem and challenge and suffered in pre-civil rights America. And he clearly wasn't the only great orator of the day. Why him? Well, as it turns out, you guessed it, there's a pattern. All the great and inspiring leaders and organizations in the world think, act, and communicate in a similar pattern that's the antithesis to everyone else. A marketing message, for example, from computer companies like Dell, Hewlett-Packard, a group of others, is we make great computers. They're beautifully designed, state-of-the-art, user-friendly. Want to buy one? Now, that's how most of marketing, in one way or another, is done, to say what you do, how you're different and better, and then hope people are going to respond by buying your services or product. But people rarely believe that what they do is as awesome as we believe it is. Think about it. Now, so here's how Steve Jobs communicated about Apple. I think you always have to be a little different to buy an Apple computer. I think the people who do buy them are the creative spirits in the world. They're the people that are not just out to get a job done. They're out to change the world, and they're out to change the world using whatever great tools they can get. A lot of times, people think they're crazy, but in that craziness, we see genius, and we make tools for those kind of people. Hear the difference in the message. It's about the person. It's not about the company or the originator. In the summer of 1963, 250,000 people showed up on the mall in Washington, D.C. to hear Dr. King speak. No invitations, no websites to check the data and the date. How did that happen? Dr. King didn't go around telling people what needed to change in America. He went around and told people what he believed. And people who believed what he believed took his cause and they made it their own and they told people. And some of those people created structures to get the word out to even more people. A quarter of a million people showed up on the right day at the right time to hear him speak. How many of them showed up for him? Zero. Well, maybe three. They showed up for themselves. It's what they believe about America that got them to travel on a bus 8 to 12 hours and stand in the sun in August in D.C. It's what they believed, and it wasn't about black versus white. 25% of the audience was white. So no matter how talented, skilled, experienced, hardworking, and unique you are, unless you determine the major factors that influence the ways others think and act, your success may be limited. This does not equate at all with manipulation, but with consistently generating authentic personal and professional satisfaction while making the lives of others considerably better. It's about them. I've seen some of the most talented and well-trained people in the world with stellar academic backgrounds and exceptional training accomplish barely average results. I saw that in my former profession as a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and in coaching, because they did not master people and influence skills that truly resonate to actually engage others. And I've seen people who master these skills soar personally and professionally. One key principle of influence was summarized by Dale Carnegie. Ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. This means that for the ultimate influence, we first have to ask the question, what's in it for them? The greatest story command is this: make me care emotionally, intellectually, aesthetically. Usually in that order. Now, this is huge, I think. Numerous studies have the same message. To influence someone, it is essential to connect to their underlying identity. State-of-the-art neuroimaging and cognitive neuropsychology have demonstrated how we create ourselves through narrative. In other words, our own sense of self. There is a specific location in the brain for our sense of self. This specific region in the forebrain specializes in personal self-narrating actions and thoughts. The brain origin, in other words, of our identity, our sense of self. So think about this in terms of this question. What are your prospects' fundamental needs and ideals? To make them care about what you offer, you need to know what they already care most about. home, status, family, adventure, security, mastery. You have to use your knowledge of them to build a bridge. What is their primary challenge? The most powerful stories began by identifying a core ideal or concern of the prospect. Here's something that we know now. People buy what they identify with. You can take a group of people, however large, and present them with 10 items and hook them up in a brain scan and have them purchase, at the end of looking at all the products, one item. You can predict with accuracy in the high 90% which of those 10 they will pick. Neuroeconomic studies have shown that the biggest determinant of purchase present of a actually a purchase decision, I should say, is when a product or service resonates with their identity. When it lights up that portion of the brain associated with their identity, that's what they're going to buy. Think about the decisions you make in doing that. For many, many years now, when I'm ready for a new car, I don't consider a bunch of brands. There's only one brand I've driven for the last, few decades. So things that you identify with, you ultimately make as a default decision. This activates the specific portion of the brain that synthesizes a sense of self. So the goal here is to sell people who believe what you believe, not just to sell to people who need what you have. And hear the difference. This is the unstated secret of Martin Luther King, Steve Jobs, Abraham Lincoln. This resonates with their core identity, their why. This is why you bought 10 out of your last 10 books. When people feel a unity with others, they feel a shared sense of identity. This principle moves beyond simple similarities to embrace a sense of kinship, of being together in a sense of unity, to sacrifice personal interests for the welfare of the group even. So, here finally is the answer to quiz number one. The people who made to the final round shared similar experiences with the interviewer, not just with purchase decisions. We buy, hire, or affiliate what fits our identity. But when there was a resonance of identity, they made it to the final round. Now, and I'll come back and talk if we have time to why I delayed, I think that's an important aspect too. But now here's an important factor. Cognitive studies have shown that the message itself is not directly responsible for change or for purchase. It's not what someone will say in response to your communication, but what they will say to themselves as a result of your communication with them. The direct result of change is due to self-talk. What a person says to him or herself after receiving a message. Think about how you more likely recall the comments you made to yourself more than the comments that were made to you for any previous discussion. This is another reason we want to avoid negative messages. So here's an important component that I want to begin with a story. Dr. Robert Maloney, a professor of ophthalmology at UCLA, was the first surgeon in North America to perform LASIK surgery. He had to help his patients overcome their fear of this, at the time, totally unknown procedure, which involves cutting a flap on the surface of the eyeball, the cornea. He had to give full disclosure, including negative possibilities that could easily discourage people from getting procedures they needed, all without testimonials of success stories from former patients. And think about it. Who's going to be the first person to let somebody cut your eyeball open? That's even braver than the guy that ate the first oyster. So he listened closely to his patients and discovered that the value proposition they actually cared most about was trust. They didn't want guarantees. They wanted connection. So Maloney began telling his patient, no matter what happens, I'm going to be here to take care of you. Then he'd tell them the story of what he expected would happen with the surgery. He would cover, as he had to legally, negative information about problems they might have to struggle with, but he would conclude his story with the resolution that satisfied their emotional needs. It brought closure to it. I'm never giving up on you, even if there's a problem. We're in this together, walking side by side. So his emphasis, his framework, was the story of relationship and connection. His call to action was for his patients to trust him enough to make their leap into uncertainty with him. By now, Dr. Maloney has personally performed more than 50,000 vision correction surgeries. And this, I believe, is what my mentor coaching clients need to sense from me, that I will believe in you until both of us do, and I will walk side by side with you into and throughout your success, no matter what. Trust is the foundation of developing rapport, of creating an influential story pattern. The second primary tool of influence, number two, defining your story. In a dialectic between emotion and rationality, the right and the left brain, sort of, emotion wins hands down, always. This is basic human nature. Our emotional side is like an elephant, and our rational side is like the rider on the top. The rider holds the reins, looks like he's in charge, but if the elephant and rider disagree about which direction to go, guess who picks? 180 pounds versus 12,000 pounds, slam dunk. The first rule of telling stories is to give the listener an emotional experience. The heart is always the first responder, meaning the portal of entry is the amygdala in the midbrain that sorts affective responses, emotional responses. Metaphor and analogy, some effective ways of doing that are building blocks to evoke images and activate sensory memory, feeling memory, with all of its rich synergy and emotional associations. This brings the listener into the story as co-creator. So, define your story based on what your performer, what your followers really need. Define the specific needs of the people you want to influence with your work or your offering. Include the steps they need to address their problem. What's the first problem they need help solving? Once that problem's solved, where do they go next? Create a path of steps to help them realize their goals. Remember, if you want to change, create a system, not just focus on the goals. Help them solve their problems, services, products, tools that they need. That's the only thing that people will pay you for. What they can't quite do or be themselves, that you will offer. It's not a pretty website. It's not initials after your name, but something that you provide for them that they can't do or be themselves. Every person and organization on the planet knows what they do. Some know how they do it. A few know why they do what they do. And by why, I'm not talking about making a profit, but what's a purpose? What's your cause, your belief? Why do you get out of bed in the morning? The inspired leaders and the inspired organizations, regardless of their size, industry, or focus, all think, act, and communicate from the inside out. Perhaps more important than achieving a goal is who it makes you become to fulfill the goal. Think about that for yourself. Apply that to your client as well. What this tells us is that people don't buy what they do, don't buy what we do, rather. People buy why we do it. The goal, then, is not to do business with everybody who needs what we have, because we think everybody should be doing what we offer. The goal is to do business with people who believe what we believe. The why is your story, your mission. And it should be bold, captivating, and inspirational. Marketing and brand loyalty are about emotion way more than reason. Phil Knight, founder and CEO of Nike, said, "You really can't explain much in 60 seconds, but when you show a picture of Michael Jordan, you don't have to. It's that simple." Sometimes you can give somebody all the facts and the figures, and they say, "Well, I know what all the information, the details say, but it just doesn't feel right." Now, that phrase, "feel right," comes from the part of the brain that determines decision-making, not language, not logic, not reason, not intellect, our emotional brain. Sometimes you say you're leading with your heart or have a gut feeling. Your heart and your gut are not really decision-making body parts, as you know, but metaphors for our limbic system. It's all happening in our limbic brain. Some people respond to why you do what you do. The reason, the need to know why you do what you do, is crucial for them to want to be part of what it is you do. Now, our most immediate intuitive response to someone is based on two things: confidence and connection. Confidence is the perception of strength and capacity to make things happen. It commands our respect. Confidence is a state of mind. Connection is the client's sense that you understand their feelings, interest, and view of the world, an empathic resonance. When people project this warmth, this connection, and bridge, we like and support them. Strength and connection are complementary, not mutually exclusive. Amy Cuddy at Harvard did seminal work in this area to find that emotional responses to people who project both strength and warmth are the most influential and effective. The third primary tool of influence, your body of work. So, these three crucial questions. What are your clients' primary needs and challenges? What then is it that makes you distinct and unique and memorable? And what is the premium the client gets by doing business with you? The mind and brain sciences show us how good communication involves four elements: clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity. This is the four principles of good writing in the Bible of writing. It's also the four principles of good speaking. This is how language works best in speaking and writing. When Maurice Sendak wrote his book, Where the Wild Things Are, he worked for 10 years on a book with 338 words. Now, I've been accused of approaching that number per sentence. For example, when he's ready for the action to begin, he says very simply and vividly, "Let the wild rumpus start." Perfectly chosen, crisp, simple, powerful words. Competitive advantage requires creating a perception of exceptional differentiation and then accentuating it. When you're successful at accentuating your market uniqueness, the consumer will redefine the competition as less desirable. Your brand is the cohesive story of your business, the identity of each product and service that people associate with the experience and expectation of your brand. Now, your brand is your internal organizer. It's not something you're splashing on the on your website or on your business card. And we'll return to that at a later point. And the fourth, the final primary tool of influence, the mindset. Now, we're going to spend our entire third seminar on this. It's this important. But here's kind of a précis for this. Focus on the experience you deliver. A winning business engagement creates an emotional connection with the consumer to align with you. Here's a story told by Simon Sinek, author of Start With Why. Simon observed that all the signs of panhandlers had a similar message: "I'm needy, please help me." He believed that by changing slightly the homeless person's message, he could change the results. And Simon found a street beggar in New York who's willing to work with him on this experiment. In talking to the woman, he learned that she received an average of $20 to $30 each of her 8 to 10-hour days. If she got to $30, it was a big day for her. Simon convinced her to change her sign. Instead of focusing on her situation, homeless and hungry, he helped her craft a sign based on the person who read it. If you only give once a month, next time think of me. In the first 2 hours, she collected $50. When the message shifted focus from her needs to focus on the experience of the passerby, the results increased significantly. This emphasizes that the focus needs to be on the person making the decision, your potential client, not on the needs of the recipient, the presenter, or the seller, or all the great stuff that you have. The messages we send are very subtle and often operate in a subliminal way. People are influenced positively or negatively at an unconscious level. When we send out messages that are about us, like the quality, the benefits, the features of our services and products, we're going to get less response. The more we take as point of reference the recipients of the message and resonate with them, the more they're going to be willing to join us and create a mutual engagement and fulfillment. So think about the messages you communicate. Rather than beginning with the benefits of what you do or the facts or features, begin with the issues of the recipient, the pain points, the needs, the challenges. What will someone pay you money for? They will pay you for what they can't do or be themselves. So, rather than telling someone about your experience, your credentials, your training, focus on what's in it for them. No patient in 25 years of practicing psychiatry and psychoanalysis ever came to work with me because I was named one of the top doctors in America. No client as a mentor coach in the last 15 years has come to work with me because I've written 24 books. They don't care, and they shouldn't care. They want to know that I care about them. They want to know they're going to get something for them. It's not about me. They want to know I'm in it for them and get the sense that I confidently believe in both of us to do that, that I am loyally and passionately 100% dedicated to their success. People, and this is from Teddy Roosevelt, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. It's been said that there are two things people don't want to know how they're made. Laws and sausage. That's in Texas, but I think it's applicable. All right, add this as a third. People also don't want to know all your qualifications and degrees and training and experiences. Clients want to know, what's in it for me? Remember that our brains release dopamine, the pleasure chemical, when we anticipate a positive experience, such as just before spending money or anticipating a positive result. This emphasizes the role of anticipation, of hope, of expectation in your message. Your message and mindset both center on your why. The most common difference between the best and everyone else is a compelling reason for commitment, the why. Martin Luther King gave the I have a dream speech, not the I have a plan speech. Meaning comes from contribution, something you believe in and that makes a difference. You have to know what you're worth. I believe when someone works with me in mentor coaching, it will make a significant difference for the rest of their lives. That's the kind of difference. When you believe that and know that, and you convey that not in words, but in your presence, in your confidence, that's what somebody's going to sign up for. We know from neuroeconomics, I correspond with a couple of neuroeconomics labs, people make decisions in their midbrain 8 to 10 seconds before they're even consciously aware of it, before it's booted up to their forebrain to make it make logical and conscious sense. No strategy, and this is huge, no strategy replaces integrity and caring to make a difference by connecting with others, to be genuine, to be authentic. Your why determines what you focus on and what you don't. The number one thing about the successful 1% of people, they are compelled by goals and dreams, having a specific why. People have a need to feel a sense of belonging. Before people decide what they think of their message, they decide what they think of you. And this is a reading that they don't take necessarily consciously and logically. Remember, 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. The first thing, the most contagious thing, is someone's going to read and resonate with your state of mind, with your sense of being, your sense of confidence. The drive to affiliate is among our primary needs as humans. A fundamental effectiveness is connection, to be understood, to make a difference for the other person. So, in a brief summary, here's an application of the influential story components, just in sort of bullet form. I think this is in your outline. From birth, our brain's primary goal is to make causal connections. If this, then that. It's the unconscious operating system and the patterns, the algorithms that we develop to respond automatically. We don't think in abstract, but we think in specific detail. When something is more easily pictured or experienced, it seems more real and more believable. An active verb tense makes an experience more concrete and believable than a passive verb, which is more abstract. Our brains are hardwired to be a member of a group. A good brand shares the same impact as we become confident in the predictability and trustworthiness of that brand. Every brand is a story with its own history, expectations, promises, and especially emotions. Your brand is a story, and stories are more important than facts in changing people's minds. Passion brands create passionate followers. We buy something when it activates the part of our brains associated with our sense of self. We buy what's consistent with our identities. This emphasizes how important it is to know the specific challenges of the people you market to. And finally, your authenticity is crucial. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself, to care. So, let the wild rumpus start. Okay, if you'll manage the background noise, we're in discussion mode. I'm interested to hear any thoughts or questions or things that you'd like to talk a little bit more about. First, any clarifications? I hope this made sense to you.
Dave, did you send out the outline individually,
the outline
or is that something?
It's downloadable at the same place you got the number, and you see the four ports for recording. The recording will be placed within 24 hours, probably by in the morning, but there's an a place to click and download the outline. Now, it's a little lengthy. I think it's 22 or 23 pages, but it's at that same page that you have.
Thank you.
Right? It's not bold, but it's there. It's below the number and the call-in and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I would recommend printing the outline. So thanks for clarifying that. What else? What else would be helpful to talk about? Is this all making some sense to you? Some of it may be new. Some of it may be what you already know, have heard, or maybe even know intuitively. Any thoughts about what you're taking away? Would anybody would like to share a one specific thing that you're taking away that may make a difference for you?
Dave, it's Eric Jack here. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you, Eric?
Good to talk to you. You know, I'll tell you, it actually refocused how I want to roll out and sell some of my new service offerings.
Well, that's because right. I know you need all the help you can get, my man, so I'm glad it was helpful to you.
Well, no, there's quite a bit, as you well know. But the part about authenticity is really what crystallized it for me. Because it really points out a very good way for me to sell my coaching services.
Yeah, people have to know that you care. And when you do, it shows, they feel it, and that's communicated instantly. You know how you
well,
do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, thanks for
the... So it resonates.
Exactly, yes. And then we find reasons to make it make sense. Whether it's causal or not, it will fit because we make it make sense. So that's the way our brains happen to work. So, yeah, thanks for that, Eric. Other thoughts, questions, or comments?
Yes, Dave, can you hear me? Thank you. I'm sorry, this is Debbie.
Debbie, hey.
Hi, thanks. I have a simple question. How does a client get to know your story?
Well, story is like a brand. It's something that you have that's an internal, consistent, cohesive organizer. Now, I don't tell a client my story. I don't tell a client my brand. They will look at a website, maybe infer that, because they
mm-hmm.
take away what's meaningful for them, for what resonates with them. But I'm not going to superimpose my story because I'm not going to ghostwrite my story on a client.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about this material. My emphasis has been think about what your challenges are, what your questions are, and listen from that perspective. I've put a lot of, I've accumulated a lot of stuff to sort of offer it in a way to see what resonates and how you can incorporate it into your story. And that's what's important.
Right.
Remember,
okay.
It's what the client says to himself or herself on the basis of what you say, not what you say to the client, that makes the major difference. So have your story cohesive and be able to speak from that authentic position of knowing, that core
mm-hmm.
identity. It will come across as a state of mind, for example, of confidence, of being able to resonate entirely with the client, to focus on the client, not making it about you. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter all the successes you've had. The question the client has is, can you help make me a success right now? And what do I need that you have, and how can you convey that to me?
Got it. Great.
And
thank you for clarifying.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you for clarifying.
Dave,
I got it.
And what changes minds and what helps people is not information. You know, if information were enough, we'd all eat vegetables every day, work out every day, have a lot of money saved up for the future, be thin. It's not what we know. It's not information that helps. There was another question that was forming. Go ahead.
Dave, this is Maria. I just wanted to know if you will be, or if you can, or perhaps can point me in a direction to learn a little bit more about how framing our question influences or kind of drives a client to, or prospective client to think in the way we, I guess, want them to think, right, in order to make the decision that, you know, they need to make.
Okay, that's a good question, and we will talk about framing because a framing determines the mindset that's booted up. But I don't think it's a good idea to begin to do that for the purpose of having the client think like we want them to think. Let me give you a simple example of that. Whenever a client experiences some uncertainty, trepidation, anxiety, that activates a part of their brain that the brain can't determine, can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. It's the same process, the same activation. So how it's framed is going to determine whether that client is going to label it as anxiety and avoid, head back to cover, or frame it in a present way in terms of looking for the excitement, the opportunity, the possibility, and move ahead. So the framing right there determines how a client's going to proceed. Whenever a client begins to change and experience something new and different, it's understandable they're going to experience some trepidation. Now, how we help them as coaches to reframe that as an understandable experience because they haven't done it before, so we resonate empathically with their concern, with their anxiety or uncertainty, whatever their words, their experience is, and we help them to see how they can frame it in a way as part of an evolving identity, a new model of progression, so that they then can use that signal as validation that they're moving ahead. So the framing makes a huge difference. I just noticed we're over time. I want to respect that. Great question. And we'll pick up right here next time. If you look at your email, want to send in answers to any of those questions, I welcome that. It helps me a great deal to know the things that each of you may be interested in. Thanks so much for your energy, interest, and responses and questions. I look forward to more, and we'll pick up right here next time. Thanks very, very much. Look forward to it. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Thanks.